Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You see, darlings, the whole world round. We've all gone wild for this new sound. Hustle 76. Everybody dance now. You've got to dance now.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from newsounds.org and streaming live on Facebook. I'm John Schaefer. Stephen Merritt is the musical raconteur behind the band The Magnetic Fields and a number of other bands as well, but he seems to save his most ambitious projects for The Magnetic Fields, including the 50-song memoir, one song for each of the first 50 years of Stephen's life. The Magnetic Fields can be a lush, almost orchestral, disco-infected sound, as in the song you're hearing in the background called Hustle 76, but it can also strip down to something spare and acoustic, and that's what's happening here in our studio today, as Stephen Merritt, with his trusty ukulele in tow, rejoins us for this edition of the Soundcheck Podcast. Cellist Sam Duvall is with him as well, and they're going to play a couple of songs for us, beginning with this one called Wonder Where I Came From.
In St. Thomas, barefoot beatnik's bunk on a boat. In Rome, is it there I'm from? I wonder where I'm from. Up in Yonkers, two blocks from the Bronx, baby born about as big as your thumb. Is it there I'm from? I wonder where. Never stayed in any one place 2 years. I was made in America, three cheers, until Baden-Baden in the BRD, later hosing on my baby bum. Is it there I'm from? I wonder where I'm from. Rarely stayed in one place more than a year. I was made in the Northern Hemisphere.
Stephen Merritt and Sam Duvall from Magnetic Fields and a song called Wonder Where I'm From. I think I mangled the title introducing it, but the sentiment was right. Stephen Merritt and one of the songs that he wrote for the 50-song memoir. Stephen, what's the chronology here in terms of you writing these songs about your life and then famously meeting your dad, the psych folk singer-songwriter Scott Fagan, because that all happened around the same time, didn't it?
All my relatives are psych folk.
Well, your mom figures obviously pretty prominently in a lot of the songs. But so did you meet your dad while you were in the midst of this project?
No, a bit before. I met him at two different screenings of the Doc Pomus documentary.
Right.
The title of which I think is Save the Last Dance for Me.
Oh, is that the name?
Or
it somehow has.
If it isn't, it should be.
Yeah, right. great singer-songwriter. And so that's where you first met him.
Yes. That's the only times I've met him. It's been
those two screenings.
Yeah.
And then there was talk of him trying to do a record of your songs. Did that ever happen?
Not as far as I know.
Yeah. But as I say, your mom figures prominently in a lot of the early songs. How reliable a narrator are you?
I don't know. you're asking the wrong person.
Okay.
How reliable a narrator are you?
I try and be as reliable as I can.
There you go.
But like you, at the end of the 50-song memoir, I will admit to the possibility of opinion and misremembering and misrepresentation weaving their way into whatever I'm saying.
I think I have only misrepresented by omission, but that's a... that's a major source of misrepresentation.
Yeah. So the sins of omission versus the sins of commission.
Yeah.
So when you sing about things like, you know, wearing lederhosen and living in the BRD, the Bundesrepublik Deutschland, West Germany, as a one-year-old, did you briefly live in Baden-Baden in West Germany?
Yes. My mother married an army officer who had just graduated West Point and was sent off to Baden-Baden. And we lived there for, I don't know, a few months or something. So my first language is German, and my first memories are of a castle.
A castle?
Mm.
Wow. So when you do have these kind of very specific memories of, you know, riding in a blue VW bug to try to get to Woodstock in 1969 and being stopped by the traffic, all of that stuff, those are real memories of your life.
Well, no, they're real accounts of my life. When I'm young, it's not necessarily things that I remember.
I see.
And I do mention, in addition to Woodstock, I mentioned the Stonewall Rebellion. I wasn't there. I don't remember it. I wasn't aware of it at the time. It's something that happened in 1969, but it's not something that happened to me at the time.
Right.
I would say that it did happen to me later, it retroactively turned out to have been happening to me, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. So this project started, I guess, almost as a dare, right? Wasn't it? It was Bob Hurwitz who ran Nonesuch Records who...
I'd say most of my records start out basically as a dare.
Well, you know...
It's essentially, there's a bad idea that someone says, wait, carry that further, and it's a good idea.
Right. So... this kind of stunt journalism thing that we occasionally see, like, you know, A.J. Jacobs, who wrote the book The Year of Living Biblically, you know, and does all these kind of exercises in stunt journalism. It seems you do stunt songwriting, 50 songs about your life, a whole album of songs whose titles start with the letter I, 69 love songs. I mean, what's the appeal to you? Does it just, like, get your creative juices going?
I just like to know what I'm doing beforehand. Otherwise, the world is my oyster, and it's a large, disgusting oyster. I don't want to have no guide whatsoever to what I'm doing. So I pick something often pointedly arbitrary. The album I, which is the one with all the titles beginning with I, was essentially a parody of 69 love songs in that all the songs really have in common is that they all start with the same letter in their title.
Right. Well, it's an ambitious thing to do a 50-song memoir for you as a songwriter and as a musician. But I also have to say, it's an ambitious thing for us, your listeners, because, you know, as with 69 love songs, these are huge undertakings and they require a, you know, substantial input of time and attention from your listeners in a day and age when even single albums have kind of fallen by the way, and everybody just listens to tracks and playlists and stuff like that.
So, I don't.
You're still wedded to that idea of the album as an art form.
A woman from Vice, I think, some journalist with a camera, came to my house and she saw my CD wall. And she said, "Oh, it's so neat that you keep these keepsakes." And she didn't understand that this is how I listen to music, and that I look with contempt on the idea of listening on the computer because the sound quality is awful.
Right.
So we had a tussle.
Yeah. It's a funny thing because most of the people who say that the sound quality is terrible are not themselves CD fans. They're vinyl fans.
I like both. I also like cassette.
Really?
Really.
But that's like the crappiest sound out there.
Oh, no. Cassettes? MP3 is definitely the crappiest sound out there, followed by FlexiDisc.
Well, if you're going to start throwing FlexiDiscs in, you might as well throw in Edison cylinders and wire recordings and
stuff. Oh, but they
like
have
that.
A certain warmth.
Yeah.
And reassuring fire like crackle. The first record I ever had was a copy of the single ABC by the Jackson 5 mm-hmm. that was on the back of a box of Alphabet's cereal. And this wasn't a flexi disc. This was actually in the cardboard.
I remember those.
Yes.
And you would cut it out and then you'd play it on your little portable 45 RPM player.
Yes. So from there, the sound quality can only improve.
That is absolutely true.
Yes.
But, I mean, the whole cassette thing, I mean, you're talking about such thin tape and it gets stretched so easily and the phasing because the tape is, I mean, I don't want to get lost in the technical weeds, but I'm with you up to, but not including the cassettes.
Okay, well, the Throwing Muses album that came out only privately before the same collection of songs was released on CD by 4AD, mm-hmm. has markedly better sound quality on cassette than it does on the CD that was later released of it. I'm suspecting that there's a generation difference.
Yeah.
And that maybe they bounced it to analog or something to warm it up, not realizing that it was already recorded on analog.
Right. I guess that is a possibility. Tell me about this big event at the Apollo. That is hallowed ground for a musician. It's got to be really exciting for you to be bringing the band there on June 15th.
15th and 16th. It's a two-night show. Mm-hmm. If you have to buy tickets for only one night, buy the tickets for the first night so that you can change your mind and come on the second night as well, and you won't be lost. So I've never played the Apollo before.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I have never been to the Apollo before because I never find out about anyone playing at the Apollo until they've already played there.
Right.
So if the same is true of you, this is your chance to actually go to the Apollo because you know what's happening before it happens.
Uh-huh. And this will be the full-on band experience, Magnetic Fields.
Just the seven of us.
Just the seven. Yeah.
Yes. The full-on experience is on the record, where I think it's 11 people played on something.
So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. But just the two of you here in the studio today, and a couple of these songs are from the 50-song memoir. The first one is early. It's 1966. This next song is also kind of early-ish, isn't it?
73 or something like that.
Right.
Yes.
So we're getting like, you know,
oh dear.
Eight or 9-year-old Stephen Merritt in this?
Yes.
Something around
somewhere
there?
Somewhere like that. About the time that I got my Alphabet's box of
your ABC.
Serial and music,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's hear this performance in the Soundcheck studio. Stephen Merritt with Sam Duvall on the cello. And I think I'll Make Another World is the name of the song. And this one will include the toy piano as well.
If all goes well.
I think I'll make another world and fill it with whatever I want. No one can say I can or can't. I can see it now. I think I'll make another world. It may not start out very large, but no one else will be in charge. I can see it now. I can see it now. And we will dance, you and I, like we were very small, through the air, through the night, and through the marble hall. No one can say that's all wrong, 'cause I'll say get out of my song. 'Cause I can see another world, and I can make it with my hands. Who cares if no one understands? I can see it now. I can see it now. The little stuff I've dreamed about since I was just a zygote, the headless caryatid with her plucky seeing eye goat. No one can say that's all wrong, 'cause I can say, hey, it's my song. And I can see another world, and I can make it with my hands. Who cares if no one understands? I can see it now, and I can see it growing and moving by itself, talking in its own way. It's realer than the old one.
That's lovely. That is Stephen Merritt singing, playing the ukulele and the toy piano, Sam Duvall playing the cello, and I think I'll Make Another World is a dramatic flourish there as the lyric sheet goes crashing to the floor, from the album called A 50-Song Memoir. That is the latest from the Magnetic Fields. They are playing at the Apollo Theater June 15th and 16th. So would the younger you, I mean, you had such a strange upbringing with, you know, moving with your mom hither and yon and, you know, the various folks that she took up with, as we learn in a lot of the earlier songs. Would the younger you have known words like zygote and caryatid?
So when I was in Syracuse during gradeless elementary school at a Summerhillian progressive hippie school, we each contributed a word to the spelling bee. You know, people would say success, possess, and I did Archaeopteryx.
Now, is this the kind of school where the kid who brought the word Archaeopteryx to class would get beaten up in the schoolyard at lunch, or was it sort of ultra progressive and you were like the rock star of the spelling bee kids?
I think everyone was a prodigy in his or her own weird way, like the girl who was very good at building the volcanoes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when did you start writing songs? Did you start as a kid?
Yes, I did. I started before I could play an instrument, which is probably why I continue to write songs without reference to playing an instrument. I Other people tend to write songs at the piano or at the guitar or so, and I never do that.
Yeah. So for you, you're a lyrics first writer?
Lyrics at the same time.
At the same time?
Yes.
But not while sitting holding the ukulele or at a piano?
There's a few exceptions. If I'm writing something very tricky for a musical, maybe I will check the chords at a piano to make sure that I'm not doing something that will be difficult to sing for other people later.
Mm-hmm.
If it's difficult to sing for me, I don't really care.
Which brings up a question. In the 50-song memoir, obviously over the course of 50 songs, you using the whole range of your voice, there are a couple of moments where the singing on the record is high enough that I was beginning to wonder if it was even you.
My mother had the same experience.
Really?
Yes, she said, "Who's that singing?"
And you had to say, "That is me, your son."
Yes. You've well, heard my voice for 50 years now. You'd think you'd have heard that part of the range, but I don't usually get up that high.
No, yeah.
I'm more comfortable down here.
Well, then I don't feel so bad having asked the question, because if your mother had to ask the same question...
Yes.
As you get through the 50 songs and you get closer to the present day, the year 2002 is represented by a song about the bar where you wrote 69 love songs.
I wrote it in two bars, but one was during the day, so I treated it as my tea place rather than a bar. I wrote almost all the 69 love songs at St. Dymphna's during the day while drinking tea, and Dick's Bar during the night while drinking vodka.
Mm-hmm. So when you say be true to your bar, which is the real bar?
I mean Dick's Bar, really.
Yeah.
Dick's Bar was where I socialized. Like I would have my birthday party at Dick's Bar, but I would do interviews at St. Dymphna's.
Mm-hmm. And if you were writing in both places, I mean, how different would the results be from daytime tea-driven writing to nighttime party vodka socializing Stephen Merritt writing?
I always wondered that, but I couldn't actually quantify it. Sorry.
Hmm. So you can't...
Great question that I kept asking myself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So you listen back to them and you can't recall, oh, yeah, that was that night at Dick's, you know?
Yeah, sometimes I can, but I can't tell.
Right. So
statistically,
yeah.
Any particularly interesting thing that I could learn from the songs in bulk.
Right. Right. So over the course of 69 songs, it wasn't like, well, all of this type of song came from this place, and all of that type of song came from the other.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Even the songs mentioning alcohol are not necessarily written in Dick's Bar. Sure.
Yeah. The next song you're going to do for us is, in fact, one of those 69 love songs.
Yes.
And refers to alcohol. So do you remember writing this one?
No. Which means I probably wrote it at Dick's Bar.
Having perhaps consumed a bottle of gin.
Perhaps.
The song is called Love is Like a Bottle of Gin. And let's hear it. It's a quickie from 69 Love Songs, a record by the Magnetic Fields, and a stripped-down acoustic performance here in the studio by Stephen Merritt with Sam Duvall.
It makes you blind, it does you in. It makes you think you're pretty tough. It makes you prone to crime and sin. It makes you say things off the cuff. It's very small and made of glass and grossly over-advertised. It turns a genius to an ass and makes a fool think he's wise. It could make you regret your birth or turn cartwheels in your best suit. It costs a lot more than it's worth, and yet there is no substitute. they keep it on a higher shelf. The older and more pure it grows, it has no color in itself, but it can make you see rainbows. You can find it on the Bowery, or you can find it at Elaine's. It makes your words more flowery. It makes the sunshine, makes it rain. You just get out what they put in, and they never put in enough. Love is like a bottle of gin, but a bottle of gin is not like love.
Love is like a bottle of gin, a song from the Magnetic Fields album called 69 Love Songs. Stephen Merritt, Sam Duvall playing it live here in the Soundcheck studio. So that's going back a few years. But Stephen, when I first became aware of the Magnetic Fields, it was around the time of 69 Love Songs. And the song you're going to wrap up with today was already like kind of lost in the mists of time by that point. Tell me about Josephine.
So I improvised the song into a tape deck at the age of 15 in 1980.
Where were you living at that point?
Chestnut Hill, Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh. Man, you really did. You really have lived all over this country and a good portion of the world, it seems.
Well, mostly in the Northeast.
Yeah. A spell in Hawaii?
Outside of the U.S., I've only ever lived in Germany.
Uh-huh. There was a spell in Hawaii, right?
Yes.
Which is
Hawaii, yeah. Tennessee, New England, New York, New Jersey.
Right.
California.
So you're a 15-year-old in Newton, Massachusetts?
Yes.
Did you have a band? Had you been sort of recording stuff for a couple of years by that point?
Well, this was recorded into a cassette deck. So,
right.
This would be just before I got a four-track. Otherwise, I would have recorded it onto the four-track, I guess.
Of course. Yeah. Now I begin to see the love affair with the cassette format.
Ah.
Something that might have settled in early for you.
It's also a fun way of making tape loops. You can easily edit cassette, which is not often done, but
right.
With a little editing tape, you can easily edit cassette. And if you play two cassette of equal length. They used to manufacture
right.
Cassette tape loops. I think they were 18 seconds long. They were for answering machines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if you played two of them at the same time, they would go nicely, beautifully out of sync.
Yeah. So you had your own little Steve Reich kind of
phasing
thing.
Little Gavin Bryars moment.
Wow.
Before I had a four track.
So this song eventually became part of the Magnetic Fields' early years.
Yes.
And obviously, so is this the oldest song that you still play?
No. I think the oldest one is on 50 Song Memoir, the introduction guitar solo. Introduction to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is from when I was 11.
Wow.
Can't play it on the ukulele. It doesn't work that way. Which seemed appropriate because 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is about my experience scoring the silent movie version of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which is currently enjoying its centennial.
Mm-hmm. The movie. Yes. All right, but still, this song is going back quite a few years, and it's called Josephine. Let's hear another live performance. For this one, no ukulele is required. Stephen Merritt with Sam Duvall, live on Soundcheck.
If I were Napoleon, you could be my Josephine. could go to drive-in films in my red convertible. If I were Napoleon, I might be in magazines. I'd write some science fiction. Science fiction about you. You could be my Josephine, just you and your chaperone. Let you be my Josephine. If I were Napoleon, you could be my lady love. Look into my soft blue eyes, run your fingers through my hair. If I were Napoleon, you could be my turtle dove. Out in Corsica, in our summer cottages, and you could be my Josephine, and we could be Siamese twins. Let you be my Josephine,
Josephine, an early, early song from Stephen Merritt and the Magnetic Field, Sam Duvall playing the cello. Do you still have that cassette recording that you made at 15 of that song?
No.
Okay. Did you have your current mature, deep voice back then?
I think I probably would have sung it, if I were Napoleon. Roughly the time my voice would have been acquiring its current patina.
It's sepulchral texture.
Yes.
The band Magnetic Fields performing at the Apollo Theater, June 15th, June 16th. A big deal. You must really be looking forward to that.
I hate playing live.
Or not. 50-song memoir is out now. Stephen, great to see you again. Thanks so much for coming in and playing for us again today.
Thank you for having us.
This is Soundcheck.
Be true to your bones.
That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check us out at newsounds.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.